52. Staring upward at the massive warship, Hermann Fleischer surveyed the battle damage with the uncomprehending curiosity of a landsman. He saw the gaping ulcers where Orion's shells had struck, the black blight where the flames had raged through her, the irregular rash with which the splinters had pierced and peppered her upper works, and then he dropped his eyes to the bows. Work cradles were suspended a few feet above the water, and upon them clatters of seamen were illuminated by the crackling blue glare of the welding torches.
"God in heaven! What a beating!"
he spoke with sadistic relish. Killer ignored the remark. He was directing the native helmsman of the launch to the landing ladder that had been rigged down the side of the Blucher. Not even the presence of this sweaty peasant, Fleischer, could spoil his pleasure in this moment of homecoming. To Ernst Killer, the Blucher was home in the deep sense of the word. It contained all that he valued in life, including the man for whom he bore a devotion surpassing the natural duty of a son to his father. He was savouring the anticipation of von Kleiner's smile and words of commendation for another task well done.
"Ah, Killer!"
Von Kleiner rose from behind his desk and moved around it to greet his lieutenant.
"Back so soon? Did you find Fleischer?"
"He is waiting outside, sir."
"Good, good. Bring him in."
Hermann Fleischer paused in the companionway and blinked suspiciously around the cabin. His mind was automatically converting the furnishings into Reichsmarks. The rugs were silk Tehran in blue and gold and red. The chairs were in dark button leather. All the heavy furniture, including the panelling, was polished mahogany. The light fittings were worked in brass. The glasses in the liquor cabinet were sparkling diamond crystal, flanked by a platoon of bottles that wore the uniforms of the great houses of Champagne and Alsace and the Rhine. There was a portrait in oils opposite the desk of two women, both beautiful golden women, clearly mother and daughter. The portholes were curtained with forest green velvet, corded and tasseled in gold. Hermann decided that the Count must be a rich man. He had a proper respect for wealth, and it showed in the way he stepped forward, drew himself up, brought his heels together sharply, and then creased his bulging belly in a bow.
"Capitan, I came as soon as I received your message."
"I am grateful, Commissioner," von Kleiner returned the salutation.
"You will take refreshment?"
"A glass of beer and..."
Hermann hesitated. He was certain that somewhere aboard Blucher there must be a treasure trove of rare foods.
"A bite to eat. I have not eaten since noon."
It was now the middle of the afternoon. Von Kleiner saw nothing unusual in a two-hour period of abstinence, yet he passed the word for his steward while he opened a bottle of beer for his guest.
"I must congratulate you on your victory over the two English warships, Capitan. Magnificent! Truly magnificent!"
Lying back in one of the leather chairs, Fleischer was engaged in mopping his face and neck, and Killer grinned cynically as he listened to this new tune. "A victory that was dearly bought," murmured von Kleiner, bringing the glass to Fleischer's chair. "And now I need your help."
"Of course, you need only ask."
Von Kleiner went to his desk, sat down, and drew towards him a sheaf of notes. From their chamois leather case, he produced a pair of gold-rimmed spectacles and placed them on his nose.
"Commissioner," he started,
but at that moment he completely lost Fleischer's attention. For, with a discreet knock, the captain's steward returned with a large, heavily laden carving plate. He placed it on the table beside Fleischer's chair.
"Sweet Mother of God,"
whispered Hermann, his eyes glittering and a fresh sweat of excitement breaking out on his upper lip.
"Smoked salmon."
Neither von Kleiner nor Killer had ever been privileged to watch Hermann eat before. They did so now in awed silence. This was a specialist, working with skill and dedication. After a while, von Kleiner made another effort to attract Hermann's attention by coughing and rustling his sheaf of notes, but the commissioner's snufflings and small moans of sensual pleasure continued. Von Kleiner glanced at his lieutenant and lifted a golden eyebrow. Killer half smiled in embarrassment. It was like watching a man in orgasm, so intimate that von Kleiner was obliged to light a cheroot and concentrate his attention on the portrait of his wife and daughter across the cabin. A gutsy sigh signalled Hermann's climax, and von Kleiner looked at him again. He sagged back in the chair, a vague and dreamy smile playing over the ruddy curves of his face. The plate was empty, and with the sweet sorrow of a man remembering a lost love, Hermann dabbed a forefinger onto the last shred of pink flesh and lifted it to his mouth.
"That was the best salmon I have ever tasted. I am pleased that you found it so."
Von Kleiner's voice crackled a little. He felt slightly nauseated by the exhibition.
"I wonder if I might trouble you for another glass of beer, Capitan."
Von Kleiner nodded at Killer, and the lieutenant went to refill Fleischer's glass.
"Commissioner, I need at least 800 square feet of 1.5-inch steel plate delivered to me here. I want it within 6 weeks,"
von Kleiner said, and Hermann Fleischer laughed. He laughed the way a man laughs at a children's tale of fairies and witches. Then suddenly he noticed von Kleiner's eyes, and he stopped abruptly.
"Lying in Dar es Salaam harbour, under British blockade, is the steamer Rhinelander."
Von Kleiner went on speaking softly and clearly. "You will proceed there as fast as you can. I will send one of my engineers with you. He will beach the Rhinelander and dismantle her hull. You will then arrange to convey the plating to me here."
"Dar es Salaam is 100 kilometers away," Hermann was aghast.
"According to the Admiralty chart, it is 75 kilometers, von Kleiner corrected him.
"The plating will weigh many tons," he cried.
"In German East Africa, there are many hundreds of thousands of indigenes. I doubt not that you will be able to persuade them to serve as porters."
"The route is impossible. And what is more, there is a band of enemy guerrillas operating in the area north of here. Guerrillas led by those same bandits that you allowed to escape from the dhow off the mouth of this river."
In agitation, Fleischer had risen from his chair, and now he pointed a fat, accusing forefinger at von Kleiner.
"You allowed them to escape. Now they are ravaging the whole province. If I tried to bring a heavily laden, slow-moving caravan of porters down from Dar es Salaam, word will reach them before I have marched 5 kilometers. It's madness. I won't do it."
"It seems, then, that you have a choice." Von Kleiner smiled with his mouth only. "The English marauders are a firing party on the afterdeck of this ship."
"What do you mean?" howled Fleischer.
"I mean that my request is no longer a request, it is now an order. If you defy it, I will immediately convene a court-martial." Von Kleiner drew his gold watch and checked the time.
"We should be able to dispose of the formalities and shoot you before dark. What do you think, Killer?"
"It will be cutting things fine, sir, but I think we could manage it."